T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You know what's amazing to me, Christian, is watching Boston play Game 6. I was sitting in my hotel room, and I forget the town I was in, watching that Game 6 where they had to win against Toronto. And they were just so calm, cool, and collected, and they played with perfection. That was an A-level road game. This is an amazingly professional team, the Boston Bruins. Amazingly professional. I don't think they're going to let their fans down in Game 5. I really don't. I don't think St. Louis will let their fans down in Game 6, so it comes down to a Game 7. That's just how I view it. I don't know who's going to win, but that's how I view it.
That's our buddy Pierre McGuire, who's been nice enough to join us once again a couple days before Game 7.
The thing is, we're here, but both teams let their fans down.
Yeah, but Pierre, that's the way this series has gone. Just when you think, you assume that you've figured out where it's going, it flips, and that's what worries me about Game 7. I'm looking at home and road records. St. Louis is 9-3 on the road. They're only 5-6 at home. So, I mean, this thing has been bizarre, hasn't it?
It really has been. It's one for the ages, though. It's an instant classic for sure as a series, and nice to visit with you, Glenn, Christian, and Lou. All good. Yeah, no, I just landed in Boston. I'm pumped up. Everybody around the sea, there's a good vibe, so that's good.
Beautiful.
No, it's exciting. I mean, listen, the Bruins put themselves in a really good spot. I think most people thought after Game 5 that there wouldn't be a Game 7. I always felt there was going to be 7 games in this series. I told my bosses that from the start of the series, and I still feel the same way. Obviously, we will have a Game 7, so that's exciting. The Bruins have never, I mean, they just don't disappoint me, I can tell you. I told you, you heard that soundbite. The professionalism of their team is awesome. It's just fantastic. It really is.
Pierre, the big difference to me in this game was the 5-on-5, finally. You know, it seemed like for a while, it's like they need the power play to score, but 5-on-5, it seemed like the Bruins got some things going. What exactly did you see differently from that Bruins team, 5-on-5?
Well, for us, I think that was really positive for them. Then that opens up some more room for Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson. It's the first time I've really seen, and I've been in St. Louis all springtime, it's the first time I've really seen them be on their heels in terms of a team attacking them and really getting them backwards rather than forwards. They're used to pushing the pace with the back end really being part of their offense. They weren't able to do that yesterday. Part of it was a neutral zone play that Eddie Olczyk talked about on our show, and part of it was the way the Bruins were forechecking, not allowing their defense to jump in because they had to play defense rather than offense. So you put the two together, it makes it a pretty tough equation for St. Louis to figure out.
Hey, Pierre, what's a more accurate statement? That the St. Louis Blues power play is terrible, or that the Boston Bruins have a really good PK?
The St. Louis Blues power play is no good.
Yeah,
I won't use terrible, but it's no good. And part of it is because guys refuse to go into one-time shooting positions. I understand Vladdy Tarasenko likes to be in a strong side, and I understand they like to either rip it on goal or make that cross-seam pass to the backside. I get that. I understand he's comfortable with it. But it's easier to defend because people are aware there's no one-time option there. Colton Parayko, same thing. If Colton Parayko were in a one-time shooting position, I'm telling you right now, that would break down so many teams in terms of penalty kill, but they have him in a strong side shooting position as a right-hand shot playing on the right side. So it's just the one-time options aren't there because of it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it a very lethal power play.
So to think that they would actually turn that around is – I mean, I guess we're, you know, if you're a St. Louis fan, you're probably, you know, wishing on a star, right? Because I would think if there's one thing that could help them is if the Bruins do give up a penalty and they do put one of their guys in the box, that they actually make the Bruins pay for it. But I feel like they don't ever do it.
They haven't done it throughout the playoffs. It's one of the things that's really been and one of the only negative things about their group has been the inability to capitalize on the power play. And a lot of the games that they've lost this playoff season, a lot of it's been because, Christian, they haven't generated any momentum out of the power play, whether they score or not. And usually the other team does get momentum because of the way they've been so aggressive with their kill.
Hey, listen, Tuukka Rask has been brilliant through the entire playoffs. He's been brilliant in this series. I still think even if they lose this game, if it's a close game, and Ryan O'Reilly doesn't go out and score two or three goals, that he still might win the Conn Smythe. But you know what? Something is really missing here. How many good opportunities are they getting at him here, Pierre? I'm looking at the block shots in the series. Boston, 96. St. Louis, 58. Mm-hmm. They have been tremendous in front of Tuukka Rask. It's been unbelievable. Matter of fact, it's 2-1 in virtually every game.
Here, here. We agree. The one thing I'd say, timely goaltending does matter, though, Glenn. And if you watch the beginning of that game when Boston did not have a lot of momentum and St. Louis did, Tuukka Rask was really good.
Yep.
And the thing that's amazing to me about Tuukka, and again, going back a long time watching him play since he was a kid in Finland and playing in the 06 World Junior, Tuukka Rask's rebound control is the best I've ever seen it, ever, in his career. Whether it's as a pro, as an amateur, as a European pro, I've never seen his rebound control better. That's a sign of a goalie that's really confident. I talked about that on the show yesterday. There was one instance where you could just see how quiet his legs were, and that's why these guys were pulverizing shots on goal, and usually those are juicy rebounds, and they're just sticking to him like he's a piece of Velcro. It really is amazing to watch his rebound control.
Yeah, and Pierre, it's a Stanley Cup final, right? It's game six. Everybody is highly motivated, and we get all the time, you know, stories of St. Louis coming out, talking about celebrating, and they leak this info and that info, and people say they should already be fired up. They should already be motivated. You don't need extra motivation, but that's not how it works sometimes. And sometimes that little extra motivation does make a difference, even in a Stanley Cup final. I'm sure you've seen that before.
Oh, for sure. And you know what? I'm so glad you brought that up. Quality control matters. And, you know, you guys have been around some pretty elite teams for long periods of time. I was flabbergasted when I heard that they had already penned a letter and put it to paper and sent it to the newspaper in St. Louis about how they were going to react and thanking their fans for supporting their championship team. That's something you never do.
Amateurs.
That's just, you never
let
that.
It get out.
You
right?
Never, ever, ever, you never do that, ever. I mean, I'll give you guys a great story because I was involved in it. I'll never forget this. When in Pittsburgh in 91, after we beat the Bruins in the Eastern Conference Final, we were all sitting in Bob Johnson's office, the late Bob Johnson's office, and the president of our team came down and wanted to open champagne. And Scotty Bowman said, "What are you doing?" And the guys said, "We're going to celebrate getting to the Stanley Cup Final." He goes, "Absolutely not. We're going to celebrate after we win the Stanley Cup. This, we've done nothing yet." And I will never forget that. It was one of the most valuable lessons you can learn in professional sports early in your career. That, yeah, there are times you want to celebrate, but you just can't because you haven't got to the end of the road yet. There's still a lot of mountains to climb. And they didn't check all the boxes on that one. That's where you – I would – I'd like to see, Christian, what would happen in Patriotsville if somebody tried to do that before a Super Bowl.
Well, how about the Red Sox in baseball? I mean, listen, they celebrate after every division round.
Hey,
every round.
It's
a new batch of champagne that comes out.
When it's okay, it's accepted. It's no big deal.
Baseball players, they don't know better.
We like the party.
So, Pierre, we haven't talked to you since the whole Zdeno Chara injury.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that he played? Stupid question. I'm sure you're going to say no, and you're not surprised at all. But do you think it was a wise thing to do, and has he helped the team, other than the emotional part?
No, he helped the team a lot in Game 6, I can tell you that. He went from 16 minutes in Game 5 to 22 minutes in Game 6. That's significant amounts of minutes. And you could see the comfort level Charlie McAvoy has with him. Makes Brandon Carlo better. It takes some pressure off of Torrey Krug. The one guy that really stood up, I think, in light of all these injuries, been John Moore. But yeah, Zdeno, I'm not surprised, played. I had a player that played in the Stanley Cup final in 92. Rick Tocchet broke his jaw. He had 6 days for the jaw to heal, or maybe seven. You know, obviously Zdeno didn't have that much, but I saw Rick do it, and he was a really important player for us. And Zdeno's handled it unbelievably well. You know, he's obviously a very brave and tremendous talented person, obviously.
All right, 5-on-3 last night. They got the Bruins on the board, and you had 11 penalties called in that game. So I ask you, is that not to the Bruins' advantage when you get penalties called, even if they're on the Bruins? And you already talked about the power play of St. Louis, because that at least tells you how the game is going to be played. And if you were the Bruins, would you be concerned in a Game 7 that whoever the officials are, they're going to swallow their whistles? They do not want to be part of being the story.
history usually dictates that players play very disciplined in game sevens for whatever reason. It's just the nature of the beast. And also there are very few power play opportunities in a game seven. But because of the robust nature of this series, physically that is, anything can happen. This series is skewed. It's right off the board, Glenn. It really is. So nobody really knows. But I would say that usually you don't get more than three power plays in a game seven, usually, per team.
Total?
And that might be high. That might be high. So it depends. And I think in this series you probably would see maybe two or three power plays per team, but I don't think you'd see more than that.
All right, talking to Pierre McGuire, NBC Sports. Pierre, at the end of that game yesterday, seen it many times over the years. Maybe it's a new age of hockey. I don't know, but you know, Blaze going at it with Clifton, but the Bertuzzo one. That didn't sit right. It was like, I'm just gonna cross check you a couple times, give you a left, and then skate off the ice and I'm out of here. Yeah. I don't know who he's winking at, but didn't feel right. Didn't look right.
Yeah, that one wasn't good. And I've known Robert Bertuzzo a long time. He's a valiant player. He was a really good junior with the Kitchener Rangers. You can talk to any coach or teammate he ever played with. They all think really highly of him. I don't know what made him snap, but he clearly snapped. What I respect about that whole incident is the way Noel Achari handled it. Noel could have retaliated. He didn't. There you go.
There you
go.
He's a fryer. What do you expect?
Exactly.
You
know? He's a fryer. But no, I just have so much respect for him. How about that guy's story and how he made it to the National Hockey League? And you could just see it. That's why coaches really revere Noel Achari, because he was in a perfect situation to retaliate and exact a pound of flesh, and he didn't do it. And that speaks to me of the professionalism that I talk about when I talk about the Boston.
Yeah, but even Binnington, I asked you last time I talked to you, just like his personality, his attitude. He was in a couple little incidents in that game. I was like, what is he? It's either he's a child, he's upset, or he's like acting out.
But Pierre, the commercial breaks with him skating to his bench. What was going on there at center ice? Guys were just just running into guys. Guys were hitting him. What was up with that?
He's got a little history of doing that, and the linesmen are now very aware of it. Obviously, when he was in the American Hockey League, he had a few fights, believe it or not. He's not a very big person, but he had a few fights. Doc Emmerich chronicled some of those fights for the audience yesterday, but I've seen the tape of some of his fights. He had one with San Antonio that was pretty heavy duty. Anyways, I don't know what's going on with that, but I did the series with Dallas two series ago where Ben Bishop is 6'8", and he went after Ben Bishop, which was not a very wise move, and he's lucky that nothing significant happened out of that one. But, he's shown that he's got a propensity for doing that stuff.
I thought it was interesting. Game is over, and you're interviewing Bruins players last night. You did the same thing with St. Louis players in the game before, talking about the Cup's going to be in the building, and then last night you're talking about, you're going to play Game 7 back at home. They wanted nothing to do with it. They were just shying away from answering that question. They were good questions, but they wanted nothing to do with it. It's almost like, oh, my God, we don't talk about that, right?
Yeah, no, but you got to try to go there.
No, I agree.
And so, that's, again, guys learn. That's the one thing, and this, I believe, really is smart by Donnie Sweeney and Bruce Cassidy and the whole Bruins management team. Those five players that played in 2011 and won the Cup, having their pictures in the dressing room, I think is brilliant. And it's a resounding message to everybody, and the guys are understanding what it means. And the new guys are really understanding. And I think, and I don't know because I've been traveling all day with a connection through Detroit, but I got to believe there's going to be folklore coming out of the speech that Patrice Bergeron gave to the players before they played Game 6.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to hear. I'm so looking forward to get to practice tomorrow and spend some time with some of the Bruins players that I've known for a long time and see exactly what he did say, because I think it's going to be one of those legendary talks. And I think the Bruins have handled this really well in terms of the pictures, the five guys that have won the Cup, how they've handled things. I think it's really done a really important thing for their group. I really mean it.
Pierre, Glenn touched on it earlier. I'm just curious your thoughts. If the Bruins were to lose, could you still see Tuukka Rask, Conn Smythe? It's happened a couple times.
He definitely's got to be in. I mean, I don't get to vote on that, but he definitely's got to be part of the discussion. I think if St. Louis were to win, Ryan O'Reilly would probably merit major consideration. It's not just for the final. Everybody thinks it's for the finals, for the whole playoff. That guy's been unbelievable. He's been there, Patrice Bergeron, for St. Louis. He's been phenomenal. But I would say that Tuukka's, you know, if the Boston Bruins win, he's a lead pipe cinch to be
Let's say they lose 2-1 and he stops 36 shots and it's the difference in the game and Ryan O'Reilly does not get on the scoreboard.
He will merit serious consideration to win the Conn Smythe. Yeah. He will definitely merit serious consideration to win.
All right, Pierre, we thank you very much for all your
help during the
playoffs, and we'll talk to you down the road.
So you come by and just see us if you're at practice. Just come hang out.
I'm going to come see you guys in studio.
Well, forget about baseball. You got like 8 months left of baseball.
Oh, we're good.
No one cares about it anymore.
Hey, by the way, and I'm not trying to get morbid here, but I hope Big Pappy's doing okay.
We heard
about that last night at the rink, and everybody was like, "Are you kidding me?" And I know everybody from the NBC crew. Thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family. Unbelievable.
Kind of messed us up in the third period last night. We opened up the show by talking about it, so everybody's watching the game back here. Suddenly, all of this stuff is showing up on social media in the third period.
I think they're flying him back here at Mass General. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So
Pierre,
in real good hands.
Have a great game seven. All right?
All right, Pierre.
You got it, bud. Thanks.
See you later.
See you soon. Thank you.
You got it. Pierre McGuire from NBC. Coverage of our Bruins and the Stanley Cup Final on WEEI is brought to you by your New England Toyota dealers and by Atlantic Power Cleaning. We're going to get to your phone calls coming up next, 617-779-7937.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Take OMF with you wherever you go. Download the Radio.com app. Now back to Ordway, Marloni, and Fourier on WEEI.
I was flabbergasted when I heard that they had already penned a letter and put it to paper and sent it to the newspaper in St. Louis about how they were going to react and thanking their fans for supporting their championship team. That's something you never do.
Amateurs.
That's just, you never let it get out. You
right?
never, ever, ever, you never do that, ever.
Talking about the Philadelphia parade after the game. All right, it's 11 o'clock in case any of you want to attend that. It's going to go from Broad Street up to Washington Avenue, past City Hall, then down to Benjamin Franklin Parkway, and we'll end up at the Cart Museum. Plan today, right?
So here's the crazy thing about that. Bill Belichick lays out the parade route. Philadelphia, right? It was the Eagles?
Yes.
Yeah, in the Jacksonville Super Bowl. So he lays it out, but what nobody said at the time is Boston did the same thing with the Patriots. They sat down and had meetings. They had the whole parade route.
You never let it out.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Every city does it.
Exactly. And in the case of the St. Louis
right
Blues, people made a big, huge deal about them renting out some top floor of a bar. Well, shame on that bar. They should basically say
Wednesday night. There's same thing is happening in Boston.
Yeah, but you always get.
We already know. Right. I mean, right? They know. They
absolutely
know where they're going afterwards.
Yeah, but who's leaking it out?
Right.
That's the
problem. And this is the thing, because I know we've had that before. Where like, you know, the Patriots get bulletin board material or something like the Super Bowl, or here we are in Game 7 or Game 6 in St. Louis, and you talk about that. The players hearing it, they heard it. Torrey Crew, Carlo, they all said it after the game. They heard it.
Yeah.
And it's like, these guys, it's Stanley Cup final. They need to be motivated. It's amazing. Just like that little thing.
Yeah, it's a little extra.
I'm telling you, there's a little extra. Yeah. There always is a little extra.
Yeah.
Of course they're motivating to Game 6. But sometimes it takes like that fear of like that anxiety of, oh my God, Game 6. Now it turns into anger.
Yep.
And that fear and anxiety is left. Because now you're pissed at what you're hearing.
So that's
how it helps you.
The thing that was kind of making me chuckle a little bit is the cup is in the building.
Yeah.
Do the Blues know that the cup is in the building? Of course it's in the building. Why would it not be in the building? To me, that was just funny. Right?
And the champagne's in the building, too.
Yep, they do
and
it with baseball.
The champagne
baseball,
will be there on Wednesday. But the whole thing is, you got to get to the source of who's leaking these things out, okay? Because the bar, obviously, that was having the party leaked it out. I'm not sure the Blues leaked it out. It wasn't advantageous to them to do so. And what happened in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is their salespeople, this is normal, were out there selling advertisement to congratulate the St. Louis Blues. Well, you can't wait until Monday to do that. You have to sell it the week in advance. So they were out there selling it, and they went to the St. Louis Blues and said, you know, we'd like you to pen a letter that we can put in there as well that the St. Louis Blues are paying for. And what happened was somebody screwed up, probably some weekend employee making $8 an hour that's working at the Post-Dispatch over the weekend, was working offline to set the whole thing up, and something happened. Boom.
Yeah, and when your biggest name out of your city is Jenna Fisher.
That's not good.
In case you don't know who it is, Ham, okay, we found out he's a liar.
Yeah. Bernie Federko.
Okay, completely made up stories about Roger Clemens when he went to University of Texas as a walk-on, right, so as a catcher. But Jenna Fisher, did you hear Jenna Fisher the other day?
I did.
In the interim, the great thing about this Blues run is so many folks from St. Louis who you find out are Blues fans, including Ham from The Office.
Okay, so do you really think she's a fan?
Yeah.
You really think she sits there? She lives in L.A. She is diehard.
She
puts up her St. Louis Blues fan as she's leaving home in Burbank, California.
She's a fan.
Okay, you sure? Would you want to? Okay,
husband was a former hockey player.
Okay,
kids play hockey.
Did you play for the Blues?
No.
Okay,
fan.
So she's a fan of hockey in general.
She lives out in L.A., but she's a fan. She's a legitimate fan.
Okay, let's hear. I want to hear because she seems kind of corny.
You tweeted out that it looks like Stanley might be coming home with Pam. Now, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch accidentally, earlier today, posted online some content clearly congratulating the St. Louis Blues on winning the Stanley Cup.
This is how excited we are.
But look at this.
We are very excited. You know what? The St. Louis Post-Dispatch, they were so sweet. They sent me a cover of the Post when we made it to the finals. It says, glorious. They reached out and they sent me two copies of the paper. It was so awesome.
Hold on. You're right. You know what?
Our fans do the same thing. Our celebrity fans do the freaking way.
Maybe just because she's got I know she sounds so Midwestern.
But here's what we do.
So hokey and, I painted my nails blue.
Here's what we do.
They're so sweet. They included me in their letter.
But here's what we do. We ridicule the celebrity fans. And granted, they don't have the celebrities that Boston has. We ridicule them when they do stuff like this. And then we praise our guys. And we love them when they do it. Remember, Mark Wahlberg walked out of the Super Bowl with his kids.
Well, his kid was sick, Glenn.
He walked out.
His kid was sick.
You don't walk out.
It's all about the kids.
Come on.
You don't walk out. You tell your kid if he's going to throw up, you tell him to swallow it.
Listen, I was there. My kid wanted to leave, too. He wanted
That's
to leave.
Right. I remember that.
I said, we paid $3,200 a ticket. You're going to sit your ass down there. Enjoy it, damn
you got,
it.
You got dad of the year.
I gave him the greatest line in the world, and I did not believe it at that time. I said, look at it this way, son. You may see history here today. The greatest comeback in the history of the Super Bowl. I look great at the end of the game.
You look
all made up. I did not believe it a lick.
He probably looked at you and said, ugh, the Wi-Fi doesn't work, Dad. Oh, my God. Can we just leave?
Can I borrow your phone?
I can't get a signal.
Mine's not working.
Can I just throw this out?
Legitimately,
this is what we've done. Through this entire series, if you look at the fan base here, before the series began, everybody thought it was going to be a quick, short
scrimmage.
Series. Not just you guys. Matt Kalman, all the so-called hockey experts. Four games, or whatever. All right, and then they win 4-2 in the first game, and people were even more impressed. Powered, and they thought this team sucks, the St. Louis team. And suddenly, St. Louis wins that 3-2 game at the Garden. Now we're even. And then the Bruins come out and win, but we got a little nervous after game two, right? Oh, wait a minute. Then the 7-2 game. Oh, now we're in control of this thing. And then St. Louis goes out and wins 4-2. And then they win the 2-1 game, and suddenly everybody is in a panic and saying, a lot of people were saying, they're going to lose this thing. They're going to lose it, and they're going to lose it in game six. Now, suddenly, after last night's game, everybody is totally empowered. And yet, if you look at the history of this series, once you think one way, the series goes the other way. And by the way, St. Louis is 9-3 in the road. They're 5-6 when they're playing at home. The Blues have a better home record than the Bruins have a home record in the postseason so far. And I'm telling you, if Pierre's right and the officials swallow their whistles, and you're not seeing power play opportunities, and you're playing a 5-on-5 series, do people feel great about this one? I don't. I don't feel great about this.
Well, the reason why you feel great is because you finally, again, you saw 5-on-5. You saw three goals.
5-on-5.
Yeah, but the Carlo one was kind of a fluky thing where the thing kind of wobbled and
found its way. You know why it's fluky is because their goalie is a freaking puddle. And even in games they won, you still sat there and said, I still don't feel good about this
guy.
Yeah,
but he's always come back. Every time he loses, we brought that up the last time. He comes back and plays his best game after losing.
Well, we'll see.
I'm just saying that we've done this the whole series. And I'm not saying the Bruins aren't going to win this thing, but isn't anybody a little bit nervous then that every time you thought you had a grasp of what was going on, just the opposite happened in the next game?
Well, yeah. But here's the thing. So we've always talked about the more desperate team, right? So when we go to game seven, pretty much everyone's desperate, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, it's... I don't know what is going to happen. All I do know is that some of the things that the Blues have done, I don't know how you can ignore. You know, their penalties. I think the Bruins, to be honest with you, started taking a little bit of what Christian was saying. Your power play is so horse bleep that Chara was sitting there. You know, Chara probably committed a couple penalties before they finally gave him one.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, and then the slew foot from Marchand.
Yeah, but it's not going to be a factor in Game 7. The officials are going to let these guys play, Lou.
It seemed like they were just like, all right, you know, we're going to do a little bit here ourselves. What are you going to do? Go on a power play. What do you guys, 1-for-18? Okay, so they had a little bit of their own justice there for a while.
Yeah, I don't feel confident 5-on-5 still yet against this team. I hear what you're saying, but if you...
That's why you feel a little bit better, though. For the first time, you thought 5-on-5, they actually outplayed them 5-on-5.
Yeah, they swallowed these whistles, and they let them play. And I think they're going to let them play on Wednesday night. I think that plays into exactly what St. Louis does. And this one worries me, because everybody suddenly was concerned about Game 6, did not think the Bruins are going to win. Now suddenly it's all flipped, and now it's there. They're going to win the Stanley Cup. By the way, I think the Blues made the same mistake, as evident by some of the stuff we were just talking about. They thought they had it all won going into Game 6 and found out this series doesn't work that way. Just when you think you figured it out, the opposite happens. All right, we get back to your phone call, 617-779-7937.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Take OMF with you wherever you go. Download the radio.com app. Now back to Ordway, Marloni, and Fourier on WEEI.
Now let's head over to Fenway Park, a press conference concerning the situation with David Ortiz. It's Sam Kennedy, Dave Dombrowski, and Eddie Romero, the assistant GM. Here's Sam Kennedy talking now.
Focus is on David's health and well-being. And we're doing everything we can to get David back to Boston as soon as possible. With that, we'll open it up to questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Sam. Again, if you have questions, raise your hand, wait for the microphone, and start with people on the right.
Sam, do you have details in terms of when the air ambulance might be able to leave the Dominican?
We don't, Pete, other than we hope sometime later today or tonight, but we don't have specifics on that at this time.
And when he does arrive, would he be going to Mass General? Or?
Yes.
Okay, John, back right.
Yeah, Dan, what kind of player and person is David Ortiz? What does he mean to the Red Sox?
Well, David Ortiz is probably the most beloved and one of the most important players in our history. leading us to multiple World Series championships, an active member in the community. Be hard-pressed to think of anyone more beloved than David. And you can imagine how this has impacted the Red Sox organization. I know how it's impacted many of you who are here who love David. And it's a very difficult day for the organization.
How jarring was the news, because it went from, you know, like an attempted burglary, and then all of a sudden when you see the video, you're like, this looks a little bit different than an attempted burglary. This looks like more of a attempted something else. How jarring was the news, and then when you saw everything at first?
Well, as I said, it shocked us to the core. I can speak on behalf of John and Tom and my partners, Dave and Eddie, and everyone in the front office. It was jarring. It was, frankly, stunning and terrifying. It was a horrific incident. Our focus right now, our exclusive focus, is on his health and well-being, and doing what we can to support the family and to get David back here to Boston.
Speaking of that, are the Red Sox also sending a doctor down, and anything else you're doing with the organization just to help the family?
I can tell you that we're doing everything we can to support the family, but I'm not going to go into details on anything related to the medical care beyond what I've already said.
Two quick questions. Quickly, can you describe anything about the medical staff that might be accompanying him back to Boston? And then the second question, obviously David means so much to Red Sox Nation, everyone here. Did he have a message for Bostonians, Red Sox Nation, anyone who's thinking about him and sending their thoughts? Does he have a message for them?
Well, I can tell you that there are medical professionals that are involved with the transport. That's all we'll say on that. And knowing David, I think all of us can imagine what he would be saying to Red Sox fans and his supporters. I won't speak for David Ortiz, but I know he's fighting, and we hope and pray that this will all be behind us.
Can you just speak about just the chaotic moments it must have been for you personally yesterday to hear this information with so much going on? And he was so iconic, and when we were talking to fans today, they said that he rallied around the city and around everybody during a trying time during the marathon bombings, and now they want to rally around him.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember that in 2013, when we needed David Ortiz the most, he was there for us in late April. And so it's appropriate and expected that this community would rally around David when he needs us the most.
Chris in the front right. How difficult was kind of the information gathering last night with, you know, the rumors and trying to get in contact with people down there?
Well, it was difficult to gather information. Anytime you have a chaotic situation, it's difficult. But I want to thank Dave. I want to thank Eddie. I want to thank Raquel. Thank John, Linda, Tom. We were all in constant communication, starting around 9:30, 10 o'clock at night when we were first made aware of the incident. And then in contact, we've been in constant contact ever since then. And the most important thing is the club. You know, thanks, by the way, to the media for understanding. Maybe we were a little bit less responsive than we normally are, because it was important to us to not put out any misinformation or confirm anything that we didn't know to be true. So we were just trying to gather information and work with the medical team to focus on his health care. But it was difficult to get information, and we're appreciative of everyone's patience.
I guess for David, Eddie, just as well as you guys know David for a lot of years, how tough have these last sort of 18 hours been for both of you?
Well, extremely difficult. I mean, it's shocking when you get this type of news and heard it last night at the same time, and you're just, your heart goes out immediately to him and his family. It was also difficult gathering information that was accurate, so making sure we tried to get that, but we heard all different type of indications of what had taken place. But you're shaken, really, is what it comes down to when you hear this type of somebody who's not only, he's iconic, but he's a friend. And when you hear that, you just you feel for him and his family.
Yeah, just to echo Dave's sentiments, it was hectic, it was scary, and trying to get accurate information was also extremely difficult. Fortunately, we had, you know, a couple people on the ground there who were incredible in getting us some information, and that really helped us and allay our fears a little bit. But, you know, we understood it was a serious situation, and we're just really, you know, our prayers are with David and hoping he just gets better soon. I mean, everybody's worried about him. He's obviously everybody's big brother, so it was tough news to swallow, yeah.
Okay, Alex on the right.
David has always been, obviously, very approachable, made a point of, you know, trying to not shut off access to himself. How much has player safety and security been a concern for you guys? And, you know, Eddie, if you can talk about specific concerns that might exist for players in the Dominican or not, or more generally, you know, players from anywhere.
Well, I'll go first. I mean, player safety and security is always of paramount concern to the Red Sox, to Major League Baseball. I think our group does a good job focusing on that. We've traveled to the Dominican extensively, spent time down there, and we're grateful to everyone who was on the scene last night, who got David the care that he needed. But now, as we move forward, our focus and thoughts are on his health and getting him back here for continued treatment.
Any sort of a tribute at the game tonight?
Well, I think we'll certainly recognize what's happened, but our focus all day, I can tell you, has been on the his health and the ability to try and transport him back to Boston and focusing on those logistics exclusively.
Yeah, just to follow up on your second question, I think, you know, there are measures that we try taking and we try to educate our players, but it's not just limited to, you know, David in this instance or baseball. It's a problem that, you know, you encounter in a lot of places with high-profile athletes, and the exposure and money that comes along with it. You know, there are factors that play into that are sometimes are out of our control, and so we try to, you know, educate the players as much as we can. We hope this is just an isolated incident, but in David's case, and you know, it's a tough one.
Pete on the right. Sam, were you able to speak to Tiffany?
I've left Tiffany a voicemail, and we've texted back and forth, and she expressed her gratitude specifically to John and Linda, and to the members of the front office who have been in touch with her directly, and she knows that we're here for her and the family.
And Sam, I think as much as anybody, you've been in the organization as long as maybe David's been, and been around him a long time. Beyond what he means to the team and what he means as a baseball player, how has this kind of affected you emotionally, because you've known him for such a long time and I'm sure have a very deep relationship with him?
Yeah, it's emotional time. You know, I love David Ortiz. We all love David Ortiz. So telling my kids last night what had happened was really difficult. And I know the same holds true for everyone up here, for ownership. It's hard to express what David Ortiz means to the Boston Red Sox. When you love someone and they come in harm's way, it's jarring. But you have to put those emotions aside and focus on what's necessary. And at this moment, it's exclusively focusing our efforts on doing everything we can for Tiffany and the kids, and for David, and doing what we can to help. We're just grateful for everyone else who's helping out as well.
And also, will any of you guys address the team? Because obviously a lot of those guys played with David.
Yeah, I know Alex, David, and Eddie have been in touch with Alex and several of the players, and I'll turn it to those guys to talk about the plan for communicating with the players.
Alex will talk to the players about it, about the situation. And I think he already has talked to some of them on an individual basis, but as a group.
Bill on the front right.
Eddie, even in retirement, can you just speak to the presence that David has in the Dominican? I know he was visited earlier today by Leonel Fernandez, who's a former president. Can you just speak to, you know, the presence that he has and the impact that he has in that country?
I mean, just think of how big of an impact he's had in the city of Boston, and he's obviously an icon on, you know, the Mount Rushmore of Boston athletes. But he is the guy in the Dominican Republic. You know, he's more famous than any president. You know, like people think of the Dominican Republic, they
take one more question.
David Ortiz, they think Pedro Martinez. And that's coming from somebody who's, you know, been exposed to Dominican over the years, and I've been awed by the impact that he has. I mean, just going to a restaurant or any presence he is, everybody loves him, and he's that guy. But it comes from the way he treats people. He treats everybody the same, which is incredible. I know that the country itself has been stirred, you know, by this incident. And it doesn't surprise me that so many people have reached out already trying to help. And the president is the ex-president was there, as you mentioned earlier. So, you know, it's been an outpouring of support for him.
Red Sox executives over at Fenway Park giving us an update on the status of David Ortiz. A couple things we learned in all of that. One, the air ambulance is there down in the Dominican Republic, and it will be leaving sometime later today. To bring David back, somebody asked a question whether there was a doctor on board.
It's an air ambulance.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
The practice normally is that you would have medical assistance. Yeah. You would have them on. But Sam Kennedy is not going to give any medical details about an ongoing situation.
I just think that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, David Ortiz gets shot down in Dominican. The Red Sox, you know, hear the news last night. First thing in the morning, they send an air ambulance down there to get him and bring him back. The Red Sox. You know what I mean?
No, I agree with you.
He's ours.
Yep.
We're the Red Sox. He's us. So
we're going to take better care of him.
We're going to go get him.
Yep.
All right. We'll stay right there. We'll come get you, and we'll bring you back to our hospital back here.
No, it is cool.
It is cool.
It's showing that, you know, we're going to go down and we got to make sure we take care of him. Mm-hmm. And I think, obviously, they're doing the right thing. They're bringing him back to Mass General. You do not know what type of care he's getting down there right now. This is obviously a lot more serious than what we first heard, that he was shot in the leg. This is not a simple bullet wound. This is something that
like
is
like you're
now,
in a club and like someone's gun goes off and you just got hit by, I guess, call it friendly fire. Like that wasn't this to me has a level of intrigue and danger that honestly just watch the video.
You heard Eddie at the end, you know, he said he's the guy in the Dominican.
Yeah.
Like he's more famous than in any president, you know, over nothing. He's Pedro Martinez. Probably the most famous of all players of people on the island. For something like that to happen to him there is just, as you said, intrigue. And I know this investigation will find out more of what happened or motives behind it.
Did I hear one of the questions? And when you get these, you get a lot of the news people. Did somebody actually ask, does he have anything to say to the fans
Go Bruins.
Who are supporting him back here? Do they not realize?
Wait, is game 7 tonight?
This is a guy who has already been quoted by his assistant. As saying that,
doctor.
That he didn't want to die and that he's
surgery
a good man.
All night long.
Right. 6 hours of surgery. And does anybody think that the first thing he's going to say is, oh, yeah.
Yeah, he opened his eyes and the first thing he thought of was not his wife, not his kids.
Yeah, David, do you have a statement for the people back in Boston?
Yeah.
It's like these people who say that he should be the banner captain, even from the hospital bed.
As far as an order, like they would be next in line. They would be. As far as based on the, you know, you're sending a plane down there. It's obviously loved here. The legend is just going to grow. So it goes family first, fan second. Would you not think that would be the case?
Yeah, I don't think it's the case today.
No, there will be a time for it.
He'll have
a press conference when he's able to do it.
Guys, it's a dumb question today. To sit there and say, has he said anything about the fans or his support? I mean, obviously the fans have been extremely supportive of him because they love this guy. This guy's been as beloved as any athlete who's ever played in this town. So obviously that's there. But the idea that he should be thinking right now, has he said anything about us back here?
That's a great question, Glenn.
Thank you, Bill. It's like a dumb question.
Send a message to the fans.
You know he's
the guy's worried about his life. For God's sakes, can we get past it first?
Because
for a while?
He's in critical condition. He's stable. In critical condition.
He's stable now.
So I'm assuming he's probably sleeping.
But what about the fans?
Probably
drugged.
What about the fans? You know,
the whole thing is. And get ready
keep
for
him sedated.
It. We mentioned in the first hour of the program a Daily Mail story. The Daily Mail is one of those tabloids out of London. And now it's spread. It's all over the country. You're seeing it everywhere. Drug lord may have hired David Ortiz Shooter over alleged affair with his wife. The story is everywhere. Authorities in the Dominican Republic believe David Ortiz was shot by two police officers hired by a drug lord who thought the former Red Sox slugger was having an affair with his wife, according to a report. Three law enforcement sources have now confirmed the motive to the Daily Mail. The local drug lord has not been identified. Police so far have arrested Eddie Feliz Garcia, but the probe is ongoing. So get ready. I mean, this is the first of probably many stories as people now are going to try to figure out the motive, because I think we all agree, after looking at the video, this was not a normal robbery in any country. That's not what it was. This certainly was a hitman. This certainly was targeting an individual. And now the question is, why? Why is he being targeted? A guy who, you just said, Lou, you know, is as popular as anybody in that country. Why? Is it political? I know he was tight with former president.
Marlins pitcher, Jose Urena, you know, fellow Dominican, said the same thing. He's more popular than any president back home. He's shocked. Because it doesn't happen to players visiting back home, especially someone like Big Papi. And that's why you talk about intrigue. You talk about motive. And it's like, dude, you just don't go after David Ortiz.
Unless you're really, really angry.
Or unless you think you're more powerful than he is.
So you want to prove that you're more powerful.
Well, the hitman was almost killed in the streets last night.
While he was in custody.
Right.
In custody in Dominican is that video that you saw him sitting against the wall getting his head kicked into it.
That was a mob mentality, just beating the crap out of him. And then the second guy who might have been a part of it, who was with the motorcycle, they're cracking bottles over this guy's head. So obviously, if you're going to do something like that, you've got to know how popular David Ortiz is. If you get caught, you're dead. Forget about going to prison or whatever. The mob is going to, the people out there are going to kill you, right? They're going to make sure.
Well, I think there's more layers to this. Good thing that they're getting him out of there. Whoever the suspect is, what do you say his name was? Do they actually have that
Eddie
guy?
Eddie Feliz Garcia.
So Garcia.
Well, the problem with him is he's not in good health right now.
No, but he's not dead.
He's not dead. But he came close to it.
But here's the thing, though. Let's just say it is. Let's just play a lot. If it is a mob hit directed by some drug lord down there, I'm sure that drug lord does not want Mr. Garcia talking. Period.
I would agree.
So. I mean, that guy's going to be under protective custody at some point in time. Wouldn't you assume?
Yeah, there's more to the story. There's no question. There are layers. You're right. There's a lot more to the story. It is not the way it was presented from the get-go. All right, we're going to get back to your phone calls talking about this, talking about the Bruins. Now it is Game 7 coming up on Wednesday. Lou's going to leave us.
Lou is Dunsky.
He actually came in here today on a vacation day. He was not scheduled to be here. And then, of course, this Ortiz thing came up.
Ortiz got shot.
Right.
And the Bruins game 6, I wasn't counting on that either a while back when I took this day. So I just, but I got to get
out of here. You thought they were going to win in 4.
Yeah, I did.
Sweet.
Why do you think I said 5? Why do you think I kept pounding the 5 drum?
Yeah, 5. None of us got this thing right.
I don't think anybody got it right.
Bye, boys.
All right, goodbye, Lou. This hour has been brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millworks, 617-779-7937. We get to your phone calls and your reaction coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.